Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a lot of news to bring you today. First, Nikolai Mew crashes and burns in his homicide trial. Brian Koberger's attorneys, well, they're rock stars. They dominated the courtroom last night. And this is why people have weapons, because you never know when you may need one. Now, let me give you an example of the worst murder plan ever. And this Colorado woman is not going to enjoy the ride that she is going to be taking. That's right. Guess what? Cancer killed O.J. Simpson. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it.
Hi, lawyer. Lawyer. Lawyer.
All right, everyone, you know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't, like if you do, leave me a comment below, and hit that little bell for notifications, and it helps that little algorithm thing that they keep talking about. Now, you can also listen to us anytime on any of your favorite podcasting apps. And guess what? We just went over 2 million downloads. Can you believe it? 2 million downloads. Amazing. Thank you. If you do listen to Crime Talk on your favorite podcasting app, make sure you, give us a review and rate us 5-star. We'd appreciate it. Helps with the algorithm. You know how it goes. All right, a couple of updates. So we actually have, I guess, day 2 of the Chad Daybell trial. That doesn't include the 6 days of actual jury selection. So day 2. Let's just say they're off to a slow start, already taking numerous breaks to discuss things in chambers. It's going to be a long 8 to 10 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, but we hope to have some fireworks soon. And yes, we will be bringing you the George Kelly trial. As we noted before, the court said there wasn't enough bandwidth to live stream it like we would had hoped, and that's what we were doing. But we will get it up every day as soon as it is available. And then, of course, the Young Thug trial. Who knows when that thing will ever continue again, because I've never seen more breaks in a trial ever. Apparently, nobody's in any hurry to get that one done. All right, let's go ahead and get to the docket. First, Nikolai Mew has been found guilty of first-degree intentional homicide of a 17-year-old young man after he was surrounded by the gang of teens while tubing on the Wisconsin River. Now, Mr. Mew more than likely will spend the better part of his life in prison. He is 54. And like I said, this stabbing goes back to an incident that took place in September of 2022. The victim of the stabbing was Isaac Schumann, and that was on the Apple River there in Wisconsin. Mr. Mew is facing up to 60 years in prison. The now convicted killer was also found guilty of lesser charges of stabbing and injuring the 4 other teens, 3 boys and a young lady. Now, Mr. Mew sat in silence with his head bowed down as the verdict was read, and the jury was only out about 1 day. The trial lasted 8 days, and there were about 3 dozen witnesses that had taken the stand. Now, Mr. Mew was a Romanian-American engineer, and he had claimed self-defense in this whole entire incident. And the whole thing started when he was searching for a friend's lost phone in the river when he was falsely accused by these kids of being a pedophile. They thought that he was taking photos of the young girls as people were inner tubing down the river. Well, then there's a video of the entire interaction, and it showed the teens heckling Mr. Mew before he ultimately pulls out a Swiss Army knife and started jabbing them. Now, of course, he was attacked, but you know what? He could have stayed over there on the other side of the river. And that's always the problem in these type of self-defense cases, ladies and gentlemen. You best be the innocent victim, all right? Yes, you don't always have to retreat, but if you are the initial aggressor, then you do have to retreat in a lot of states, and it gets complicated. What advice have I given so many times over the years? Let it go. Let it go, ladies and gentlemen. Let it go. Is it really worth spending the next 60 years in prison? Probably not. Now, Mr. Mew did testify in his own defense. Obviously, the jury did not believe him. problem with his testimony versus his initial statement? Well, he had to admit on the stand that his original statement to the police was not truthful. That's tough for a jury to basically say, trust me now when I lied before. Just another good reason to keep your mouth shut, ladies and gentlemen. Next on the docket, the attorneys in the Brian Koberger matter, they are rock stars. They dominated the hearing yesterday as to whether there was a violation of the court's non-dissemination order. Okay, we'll get to that in just a minute. But they crushed the prosecution, who was not prepared, frankly looked like a bumbling buffoon yesterday. And I said last night when the hearing ended about 6:40 Pacific time, they started at 4 p.m. and they went to almost 7 p.m. and they crushed it, okay? The court was like, well, I don't know. Was there some information that shouldn't be there or not? The expert explained it beautifully. He was following precedent from the United States Supreme Court, which the judge should probably take note of since it is a death penalty case. And if there is a conviction, it'll probably make its way to the Supreme Court of the United States at some point. So you should probably follow what they say as it relates to, that's right, surveys. Let's get to it. Like I said, yesterday, about 4 p.m., there was a hearing that was set because, as you may recall, the prosecutors in the Brian Koberger case were quite upset when they learned that a telephone survey was taking place that was asking potential jurors to answer questions if they were familiar with the Koberger case. The prosecutors got all upset about it because they thought that there was some false information. And the judge was concerned because he thought they were only going to discuss things that were in the public record, referring to what you could go access in the public court file. So, what actually took place? There was a pretrial hearing over a week ago. Yesterday, they showed up. And remember, the prosecution was the one saying they should be held in contempt, they being the defense attorneys, and that they had violated the court's order and what have you. The prosecutor just wanted to get up there and rehash what he had previously complained about, saying they've tainted the entire jury pool, blah, 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 blah. I thought it was a non-issue way back when. And the defense is like, hey, we did nothing wrong. So at the hearing yesterday, the prosecution had no witnesses. But guess what? The defense was like, hey, judge, we've just spent 20 minutes listening to the same argument that we heard last week. We have our expert that conducted the survey, and he's here to explain what took place in the survey, how we came up with it, and then why it's completely appropriate and done within accordance of all of the industry standards as it relates to this type of survey. So Ann Taylor, the lead attorney for Brian Koberger, not only said, hold my beer, she was like, hold whatever drink I've got. Let's rumble. So she put up Mr. Edelman on the stand and he said, listen, I do this all the time. I have a PhD in this. I've done this for some of the highest profile cases across the country over the years. And we have this certain methodology. And what they do is they take the items that are in the media that the media has put out, and they come up with appropriate questions. How do they get to the appropriate questions? Well, guess what? They're not tainting the potential jury pool because they ask people, are you familiar with the Brian Koberger case? If they say no, they move on and they just say, okay, great. They ask a couple of demographic questions, but they don't ask you specifics. If, however, you say, yes, I am familiar with the Brian Koberger case, they then asked certain questions. We read you those questions last week. Some of the questions were, did you know that Brian Koberger was arrested in Pennsylvania? Did you know that Brian Koberger drove a car similar to one that was around the house? One of the issues that was in the news media repeatedly, which is why Mr. Edelman, Dr. Edelman, put it in his survey, was that, did you hear that Mr. Koberger stalked the victims in this particular case? Well, that's not true. And this is the one that hung the judge up as well. Well, it may not be true based upon the public record, but that's what's in the news items. And the whole issue is that if these people can identify these nine questions, that they are basically been oversaturated by the news media. So if they're like, oh yeah, I heard that. Oh, and I believe that, even if it's false, guess what? They've been tainted by the media for putting out false information. But the judge was hung up on the fact. They says, well, why would you use a false information? And Dr. Edelman explained, you have to do that in the survey. In fact, there's Supreme Court case law that says it's appropriate to put in this false information, knowing it's false, because that's what's in the media. And I think it was almost 81% could identify between 5 to 7 of those items on that 9 questions that were asked in the survey, which means Brian Kohberg is probably not going to get a fair trial in Latah County. Now, Mr. Edelman did not give his ultimate opinion as to whether he thinks that Brian Kohberg will receive a fair trial there. This hearing was only on the issue of whether the defense had violated the non-dissemination order. Mr. Edelman, I'm telling you, I would hire this guy if I needed him to do a survey of this nature. Very confident, knows what he's talking about. And how did we know he was very competent? Because the prosecutor attempted to cross-examine him. And I say attempted because it was a complete failure. A complete failure. So ultimately, the judge did not rule. But I am telling you, the performance by the defense attorneys, let's just say they hit a home run, okay? And they're the ones, obviously, that have the burden to show that there is not an ability to get Brian Kohberger a fair trial. And so they have to come up with this survey. And now the judge has stopped the survey, which is only going to delay things even further in this particular case, because they want to do these surveys in other jurisdictions to say if it is a possibility to move this trial, that it should be moved to one of these other counties where they show that Mr. Kohberger can get that. But the judge has put a kibosh to this, stopped it, because of the prosecutor who filed this motion, and the judge ruled on it ex parte, which means the defense never even got an opportunity to be heard until the hearing last week. Then they set it for the hearing last night. And the prosecutor, I think, thought we were going to get a date to get a date. And the attorneys for Kohberger are like, oh, we're ready to rock and roll. And I'm telling you, if there was a jury, and I'm telling you, if there was a bookie or some sort of wagering that you could put as to who was going to win a homicide trial, the odds of Kohberger winning went up. And the reason why they went up was because if that's how the prosecutor is going to perform on an issue that he brings to the attention of the court, and he's completely unprepared to do it. I mean, the burden was on him. He's saying they violated the order. The defense is saying, no, we're not. And that was the evidence that was presented. So we'll see what the judge is going to do. I don't think he's going to say, the judge still tries to say, well, I think there's a problem here. But there really isn't when you look at the case law that defense attorneys are relying upon. But of course, the judge has to kind of cut it both ways. Why? Because he just delayed this process. And more importantly, as the defense pointed out in their previous filings, hey, judge, you're violating my client's due process rights by delaying him and delaying the survey and the analysis in this particular case. So, like I said, Mr. Edelman also hit it out of the park. And the ultimate, the analysis were, is that the data suggests that more people know about the Kohberger case, the more likely they are to opine that he is, in fact, guilty. Mr. Edelman also told the court that posing the questions that contain false information is necessary to determine what misinformation is, in fact, prejudicial. Like I said, among the 9 case-specific questions that were being asked, prospective jurors are, have you been seen or heard that Brian Kohberger stalked one of the victims, like I mentioned. Both sides agree the statement is false and sparked, obviously, the objection from Bill Thompson, the prosecutor. But that is needed to show that the information is being relied upon. The false information is being relied upon by the people in the formation of their opinion. And that's why this is so important. Like I said, the judge seemed somewhat concerned about the questions that contained false information and that it didn't come from the public record. The judge was defining the public record as, like I said, what is in the court file. He says, there's nothing in there about stalking. No, but it's in the news media, which is people reading. The people aren't reading the public record. So it is the court's non-dissemination order. So the court perhaps should have defined the only thing to be discussed, i.e. the public record, and I guess separately define what's in the news media. Like I said, it just makes no sense. I don't understand why everybody's getting so wrapped around the axle on this particular issue. I thought it was a non-issue when it first came out. I thought the prosecutor was being petty. I still think they're being petty. And yesterday, like I said, he just looked like a buffoon. And you know where he really looked like a buffoon? Was when the defense played the first statement on this case by the prosecutor, where he did a public press conference and said, here's the information, and highlighted stuff that was in there. And he said, share it, send it to everybody, let everybody know what information is out there. Yes, the defense used the prosecutor's own words against him in the same issue that now he is in fact complaining about. He looks silly, ladies and gentlemen. Like I said, the judge is going to take it under advisement, and then they're going to move the whole issue of the change of venue to June 27th, because you can't really do anything until the judge rules on how the defense can proceed. And I think the judge needs to tread lightly and sooner rather than later let the defense finish their work, so it is in fact not a due process violation. So like I said, the public defender, Ann Taylor, rock star yesterday. I'm telling you, I was so impressed the way she was prepared, ready to go. And if this is any example of the defense that they are mounting for Koberger, he is definitely going to be represented very well. Not saying he's going to be found not guilty, but definitely zealously represented, which is what we all want for sure. So, you know, she is a native of Idaho, and she has worked at the public defender's office for some 20 years. She's death penalty certified, and I'm telling you, she's good. She crushed it yesterday. All right. Enough of that. Next on the docket, this is why people have weapons. Let me tell you this story. So an 85-year-old woman in Idaho, and I say 85-year-old woman, the reason why I point that out is because she's taking care of her special needs child, okay? And what happened? A masked intruder, a home invasion, comes in, holds her hostage at gunpoint while her disabled son slept down the hall during this home invasion. And the woman's name is Christine Janea. And according to the prosecutor that cleared her of any wrongdoing, says that her grit, determination, and will to live is what saved her and her son on the night in question. So the prosecutor cleared her of killing this guy, Derek Condon. He comes in the middle of the night with a gun with the intent to rob the house in a mask. Now, this all took place back in March of this year, and the district attorney said, hey, this was an easy analysis of self-defense because, well, it's justifiable homicide given the fact that Mr. Condon was there when he shouldn't have been. So let's go into the facts that Ms. Janea went through. She had been asleep in her Bingham County home there in Idaho. About 2 a.m., she's aroused by Condon, dressed in a military jacket and a black ski mask, pointing a pistol at her, flashing a flashlight in her face as well. Now, Mr. Condon then apparently put some handcuffs on the woman and took her into the living room at gunpoint, demanding that she cough up any valuables that she has in the house. Now, Miss Janaea, whose disabled son David was asleep during the assault, but chose not to reveal that her son was actually in the home. So in the living room, Condon handcuffs this 85-year-old woman to a chair where she told him she doesn't have any valuables in the house. She's a poor woman. Condon then puts the gun to her head before she disclosed that there are two safes downstairs in the basement of the home. So Mr. Condon then leaves her handcuffed in the living room while he rummages through several rooms in the house in search for anything of value. During the search of the house, Mr. Condon discovers David, the disabled son, and then threatened to kill the mom because he was lied to by her. Now, Janaea, still handcuffed, drags the chair that she's in to retrieve a .357 Magnum revolver that she has underneath a pillow. And it's apparently in the armrest of the cushion. And waited to see what Conda would do next. According to the prosecutors, Janaea ultimately made the decision that it was a now or never type of situation, drew the .357 Magnum, and engaged Condon, striking him and both of her shots after he threatened her once again. Now, the intruder, Mr. Condon, then opened fire on her with his pistol, striking the 85-year-old woman in the abdomen, leg, arm, and chest. What a guy. Anyway, the moral of this story here is that Mr. Condon gets severely wounded, retreats to the kitchen, and ultimately dies there on the floor like the coward that he is. It's still not over yet. Janaea, who has been shot up multiple times, is still cuffed to the chair where she fell over, and she lay there for approximately 10 hours before help finally arrives. When they did reach the 85-year-old woman about 12:17 p.m., they provided some measures to her, and she is going to survive. She was rushed to the local medical center in Idaho Falls and has been released. Thank God. Investigators found a broken window in the back of Janaea's home and a screwdriver next to the door where Condon is believed to have made an entry. Now, Mr. Condon also had a lock pick in his pocket when the police searched through his personal belongings. And the Idaho prosecutor wrote that cleared the 85-year-old mom and says, "No person in this state shall be placed in legal jeopardy of any kind whatsoever for protecting him or herself after making his ruling that Janaea was in the right to use deadly force. Absent a clear attempt by Mr. Condon to retreat from the residence or surrender, which based upon the evidence clearly did not occur," the prosecutor says the 85-year-old woman did what any reasonable person would believe is necessary to defend themselves or their disabled child under such circumstances. Good for Miss Janaea. Good that Mr. Condon is now deceased. The world does not need people that are going to conduct home invasions on little old ladies. I'm glad the little old lady had a .357 Magnum and took him out. Next on the docket, you want to hear probably one of the worst plans to commit a homicide ever? Other than maybe live streaming it, this has got to be up there. So take a look at this this woman. She's a 50-year-old, and she has pled guilty to killing her longtime partner and business partner back in 2022. And what did she do? Well, please meet Ann Tolomello. She pled guilty to third-degree murder, tampering with evidence, and abuse of a corpse in connection with the shooting death of her boyfriend and business partner, Giovanni Gallina. Now, Tolomello is going to be sentenced in June based upon her plea the other day. Now, Tolomello and Gallina apparently ran a pizza shop together. And the investigation was launched after Galena's son went to the police and said, "Hey, man, it's kind of weird. I haven't heard from my dad since March of 2022. Where could he be? Well, the prosecutors and the police did their investigation, and the prosecutors ultimately filed the case, but Tolomello never reported that her longtime boyfriend and business partner was missing and just simply said, hey, he's out of town. But ultimately, the police responded to the home, and guess what they found there? That's right, Mr. Galina. Yep, how did he die? A single gunshot wound to the head, and he just happened to be wrapped in a blue tarp inside the master bedroom. Now, Tolomello initially said that she did, in fact, shoot her partner in self-defense, which would be a good defense at trial. But when you plead guilty, you give up all of those legal defenses, and Tolomello was made by the judge in this case to admit that her killing Mr. Galina, her boyfriend and business partner, was unjustified, which means not legal, not self-defense. And she also had to report that Mr. Galina's body remained inside their home for 13 days. And she got rid of a lot of the other evidence related to the death, like the gun and cleaned up, etc. But this is where it really gets good. She hires somebody to dig a hole, a big old hole in her driveway. And she said that she would fill the hole back in with her by herself. Don't worry about digging up that big old hole for no reason. There's not a dead body going into it. I promise. Trust me. It's totally normal. I'll take care of it. You just dig the hole. I'll fill it back in. Worst murder plan ever. All right. Next on the docket. Yes, this paraprofessional is not going to enjoy the ride that she is about to take. Kind of like the special needs children that didn't enjoy the ride when she was on it with those kids. So this has been going around a little bit. I kind of wanted a way to see where it was going. All right. The news broke of this the other day that this school bus aide has been arrested, and ultimately she was fired from her job because of this video, which shows her repeatedly hitting a nonverbal boy who was strapped into the harness on the bus. Now, Miss Kiara Jones, will give her the presumption of innocence, and she worked for the Littleton Public School District, and like I said, she's been arrested. It is alleged that back in March of this year, Miss Jones elbowed the 10-year-old boy, then hits him in the face with her fist before stomping on his foot. Now, the affidavit for the arrest warrant was filed for her arrest after the footage showed this abuse, as well as abuse on two other days, and it's alleged that Miss Jones assaulted more than one student. We'll give her the presumption of innocence. Now, the police said that they saw the February 13th video in which Jones hit a boy in the mouth with a closed fist, poked him in the chin, hit him with the back of her hand, and pulled his hair. She was also repeatedly dropped a toy on the ground, held the head down on the kid, and then grabbed his jaw when he went to get it. The officer said the other video from the same day showed Miss Jones pulling another student's hair. Now, an attorney that represents at least two of the children who ride the bus, needless to say, they're not pleased, and they're going to be asking for a big check. Now, these students were transported to the Joshua School, which is a school with students that are on the autism spectrum with developmental disabilities. The buses are provided by the Littleton Public School District, and like I said, the kids here were apparently nonverbal, obviously, and they were unable to tell anyone about the abuse. Needless to say, the Littleton Public School District gonna get sued or settle before they get sued. But anyway, the school district says that Miss Jones was hired back in August. She passed all the background checks, but now she is no longer employed with the school district. And they did note that she had minimal access with the students. So I guess that minimal access, though, she really focused her attention on those kids, and not in a good way. And I'm telling you, these types of cases are some of the most offensive that you could do, okay? I have represented, let's say, for example, special ed teachers that are accused of abusing children that have special needs. Juries don't like that. Judges dislike that even more. okay? Also had one, if you're going to be a bus driver, you may also want to make sure that you get all the kids off at the stop so that when you're driving around in between your break, you don't leave the kid in the bus until you later discover them when you're done with your several hour-long lunch breaks. Once again, parents, juries, judges don't like this, right? These school districts, these aides, their job is to protect the people that can protect themselves the least. So this woman's not going to like the ride she's going on. And it's probably going to be just as unpleasant as it was for students that she took care of. All right. Next. Cancer has killed O.J. That's right. The defendant, O.J. Simpson, the defendant in the trial of the century for the 1994 murder of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ron Goldman, only to be acquitted and become a national disgrace, has died of cancer today at the age of 76. Now, needless to say, most people will remember Mr. Simpson for the Ford Bronco chase, which he led police back in June of 1994, 5 days after the stabbing deaths of Brown, Simpson, and Goldman outside of his ex-wife's Los Angeles home. Now, the trial that ultimately wound up in an acquittal in 1995 is probably one of the most controversial cases in American history, and we've had a lot. It's probably within the top 10, all right? Now, you may say he got acquitted, but yes, there was a little justice for him because he did, in fact, serve 9 years in Nevada and ultimately went to prison for a burglary for himself and another guy trying to take back O.J. Simpson memorabilia that he thought he was entitled to. Anyway, he was convicted of that in 2008 and was paroled in 2017. Then he spent the remainder of his days of freedom playing a lot of golf and, remember, looking for the real killer of Nicole and Ron. That's what he said he was going to do. I was wondering, you know, whenever he popped up, how is that search going? He is looking at every golf course in the state of Florida and Nevada, trying to find the true killer. Anyway, I do remember this case quite vividly because not only was it broadcast, but it was on the radio at the time. And this trial was only supposed to go for, I think, a month, but it turned into a circus. And yes, the famous Judge Ito, and not in a good way famous, turned this relatively simple trial into, it was like a 10 to 12 month adventure. It just kept going and going, and he kept allowing in more stuff, and it just got so absurd. I think a lot of people were shocked by the verdict, but it was truly a case that the prosecution screwed it up. It was a classic example of a case where the defendant should have lost and the prosecution lost the case. I hope this isn't the kind of case that we see in the Koberger matter, where we have some prosecutors that I think are going to be outgunned by the defense. We've got a long ways to go, but I'm telling you, don't let Koberger turn into the O.J. Simpson case.
As a pet owner, you want to give your furry friend the very best. That's why Baked in Colorado's CBD-infused dog treats are the perfect choice. These delicious treats not only taste great, but they also provide a wide range of health benefits for your pet. CBD has been shown to have many positive effects on dogs, including reducing anxiety, alleviating pain and inflammation, and improving overall wellness. Baked in Colorado's treats are infused with premium, full-spectrum CBD oil, meaning your pet will benefit from the whole plant extract. Not only that, but Baked in Colorado's treats are made with all-natural, human-grade ingredients, so you can feel good about what you're giving your pet. They're also free from wheat, corn, and soy, making them a great option for dogs with food sensitivities. Baked in Colorado's CBD-infused dog treats are the perfect way to support your pet's health and well-being. With various flavors, including peanut butter, pumpkin, and bacon, your dog will love them too. So why wait? Head to www.bakedincolorado.com today and order your dog a bag of these delicious and nutritious treats. Your pet will thank you for it.
And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Please meet Brent George. Now, this guy knows better. He's old enough to know better. He is 61 years old. Now, he allegedly approached a table at a restaurant inside Disney's Boardwalk Inn. I've stayed at the Disney Boardwalk Inn years ago when my kids were young. Nice little place. You would expect a little more mature crowd there for sure. But what did Mr. George do? He allegedly taunted a girl with Down syndrome, which of course prompted the mother of the young girl with Down syndrome to confront Mr. George and demand to know if he was making fun of her daughter with Down syndrome. Mr. George then allegedly shoved the woman twice before slapping the woman's daughter-in-law as well. And when the whole thing started to escalate, certainly went downhill from there. Well, wait, there's more. Mr. George then allegedly punched the woman's husband and punched him in the neck and returned a jab to his face as well. A bystander then apparently intervened, puts Mr. George in a big bear hug in an effort to remove him from the restaurant. George was ultimately arrested for striking the family and charged with four counts of battery. Mr. George's wife paid a $4,000 bond and got him out of custody, and he has pled not guilty. You would think Disney, the happiest place on earth, and I don't know. I don't get it, Mr. George. I've been to that boardwalk, and this was probably, my goodness, my kids were so young. I mean, they were what? I was probably still, all I remember about the boardwalk is, and this is like, I don't know, 25 years ago, 20 years ago, I have the responsibility of taking the kids that day. And we go downstairs and I get two little cartons of milk for my kids and two donuts. And they said, that'll be like $40. And this was 20 plus years ago, ladies and gentlemen. Can you imagine? So maybe that is what drove Mr. George over the edge to allegedly assault this young lady verbally with that has Down syndrome, and then ultimately start getting into this little skirmish. Maybe he was hangry because he couldn't afford the $40 for these, milk and donuts. I can only imagine what it is today. It would probably be, with inflation, about $120. Maybe that's what drove him over the edge. But either way, Mr. George, you are a dumb criminal of the day. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. And remember, yes, the Constitution matters.